Welcome to show number 123 of the Sports Card Show, brought to you by sportscardradio.com. What is going on, everybody? Hopefully you guys are all doing well out there. Another interview with my brother Ryan, who is joining us at the conclusion of the Las Vegas Industry Summit at a very nice, apparently, like two-story presidential suite at the Rio All Suites Hotel. So, hey, Ryan, sounds like life's good over there in Las Vegas.
I don't know. Today was my lucky day. Let's just put it to you like that. I don't know how. Literally, I'm in one of the nicest hotel rooms. And I was just in the Palms. I was just in the Palms in this dope room. This crazy dope room. And now I'm literally still basically, let me put it to you like this. And people might understand what I'm talking about. This hotel room has a duvet. A separate duvet, a toilet that cleans your butt. That's how. I don't know how many people have been in the United States have been in a hotel room that had a duvet. That's how baller. I mean, it's upstairs, downstairs. It's like, this, I mean, it, I don't know. Maybe like 2,000 square feet. I mean, it's huge. I mean, I don't know what happened today. Literally, I don't know what happened. It's not like I paid for this. This was $80, so I don't know what happened. I got a room upgrade magically.
Well, Caesars must have confused you with Phil Ivey or something like that. I guess that's lucky for you. I guess maybe what more people are interested on the podcast today to find out is what happened. Maybe we didn't have an interview last night. Maybe give us kind of a rundown. I know maybe today's more fresh on your mind than yesterday, but give us a rundown. Maybe of kind of the conclusion of the Las Vegas Industry Summit. Some of the stuff that happened maybe since the last time we talked to you.
It's hard to remember everything, to be honest. I know there was a distributor talk where they talked a little bit about, and I might jump around here, they talked just a little bit about the business and buying wholesale and stuff. Nothing really interesting not there. We didn't talk about the Panini stuff, did we?
No, I don't think so. The black boxes and things like that, talk about that.
So one of the main things at the summit every year is the Panini corporate address, and at the end of the corporate address, they give away kind of the famous black boxes. And I still actually have an open bind. I'm going to open actually in the presidential suite, hoping to pull something nice. So, anyways, this was yesterday in this amazing room. The only time we went down into this amazing room at the Orleans was for the Panini presentation. And Panini spends so much on marketing, it's not even funny. They probably had to pay the Orleans extra money to use that room. I mean, these guys are like first class all the way. I'm basically in like a Panini suite. And Panini makes a lot of money internationally. They're a huge company international. Selling the soccer sticker cards, they've been doing that since the 1960s. None of this they talked about at the presentation. I'm just kind of telling you why Panini has so much money. They've been making these soccer stickers over in Europe and other countries since the 1960s, and there's no autographs on these soccer stickers, and never have been. There's no game used card. All it is they print soccer sticker cards, so they literally have been printing money since the 1960s, and then they've branched out that sticker business into other things, the Disney stickers, and you've seen the sports stickers, you know, the NFL, soccer, things of that nature that they've brought to the United States. But it's a big worldwide company, billion-dollar company. I think the last time they reported sales worldwide, they were over $1 billion. Now, the United States, it's just a tiny fraction because they call it Panini America. That's what people, you know, here know of it as the Knight's Lance blog and stuff and their Panini America Twitter. But they're way bigger than that. Trust me, they've got a lot more money than that. And at their corporate address, they really just, obviously they're going to address the American, the NFL football cards, the MLBPA license that they have, the NBA exclusive that they have, and then the NHL license that they have. So just talking about other in-store promotions, Black Friday, Father's Day packs. They gave some interesting numbers, how many redemptions they fulfilled last year, 120,000. And they've fulfilled, like, I guess, 34,000 in the first, whatever, up to this date. you know, the first 3 months or whatever of this year. So I thought those were fascinating numbers. They gave stats on the blog. I think it's had 9 million page views since it started, I think, in 2010, the Knights of Lance blog. So that's amazing. It's really good. Lots of, you know, he said the Panini CEO, which is an extremely impressive person to listen to talk. He's a very professional, very sharp, extremely intelligent. He has a, you know, like an English accent and stuff. I mean, he just comes across as like a baller, basically, is how I would describe him. He said, oh, well, last year I was the only one who was projecting growth and da-da-da-da-da, and he was exactly right, because what I've come to find out at the summit is this last year's football crop with the Andrew Luck and the Robert Griffin, well, everybody made money, the distributors, the box breakers, the Panini, the Tops, I mean, these football cards were red, red hot this year. Some distributors thought it was the biggest football kind of card year ever, which is crazy to think about. I don't think that's correct. I think some of the stuff that happened in the 90s was bigger. Or
1999 was a big year. 1999 with Ricky Williams, Edgar James, Tim Couch.
Yeah, more mass produced. I guarantee you the overall sales of football cards were higher at some point in the 90s. But kind of modern day, if you kind of shift past, you know, 2000, I bet. I mean, obviously it was a huge year because all those rookies were amazing. I mean, Doug Martin, and you could go on and on and down the line.
The last couple years, I mean, the 2010 was good, 2011 was good, and 2012 has been good.
Right. So, you know, it was just a great talk. I wish they would have kept talking. You know, hold on, I got to get some water in my presidential suite here. I wish they would have just kept talking. You know, but they wanted to hurry up. They knew people wanted to start ripping into these black boxes. And that's a huge marketing tool for them, too, is the buzz and the kind of excitement about these exclusive things. And then the company that gives away the best promo, I mean, the other companies aren't giving away something like this. I mean, they're basically creating a product just for the industry summit. I mean,
and giving it away.
And getting away for free. Exactly.
I mean, these guys pay a lot of money, obviously, to be there.
Yeah, I don't know what these boxes sell for on eBay, but they're probably, what, a couple hundred bucks at least?
I would say at least $200-$300, yeah, I would guess.
The green, well, the sweet thing is this year they have the green Panini Select cards that are all serial numbered. It seems like none of these guys are clued into the NBA market, except a few very, very smart guys. I saw a bunch of guys with wads of cash trying to go around and buy everybody's green cards. Guys were like, oh, Kemba Walker, who's this? Or, you know, it's like, dude, Kemba Walker, and they're all numbered to like 10 or 15.
Yep.
The green card. And they're like that Prism technology. I mean, those are going to sell for, and you can only get them in the summit boxes.
Yep.
I mean, these are going to sell for a ton. The Kyrie Irving, some guy pulled a Lillard to 15, and the guy right on the spot said, I'll give you 500 for it. And the guy was like, nah, I think it's worth at least a grand. I'm going to put it on eBay or whatever. So I'm sure that, I mean, he's probably right. So it's crazy. It's insane. So anyways, Panini did that. We did also learn that Topps has extended the baseball license through 2020. Maybe we did talk about that last time.
Yeah, I think Panini then countered with, I guess, like signing Steven Strasburg.
Yeah. Which is interesting. You know, how many guys are they going to do this with? You know, that's very interesting that they are going to scoop up a Strasburg. Maybe they're not done. Which would put, Topps in an interesting position. What if they got Bryce Harper?
Or Mike Trout or something.
Mike Trout or Yu Darvish or any hot guy. Even if they only signed him for like a year or two, which might be smart. You kind of ride him right. You kind of steal him from Topps when he's hot and then let him go back when there's a new, and you just keep picking up the flavor. Not that Steven Strasburg is necessarily like the hottest guy right now. I mean, you know, like you said, Trout or Harper would be a big news if they did something like that. So it's interesting. It might force Topps to open up their wallet more, which is an interesting counter move. They're like, oh, you're going to get this license for the next 7 years? Well, now you're going to have to sign all these guys to exclusive autograph deals too, because we're going to come in there and get them, which is very interesting. So that's going to play out more over the next several years. I'm sure Panini was not thrilled. I don't know for a fact. Obviously, can't say that a I talked to any of those guys about that, but I'm sure they're not thrilled by the MLB's decision. But Benini's going to move on. Like I said, they're a billion-dollar business. They're a bigger company than the Topps anyways. So sure, it hurts them in the United States to not get the MLB license, but it's a drop in the bucket to the company. The overall, you know, Panini group, the whole company, I mean, trust me, it means nothing really to them.
Interesting. Well, what happened today on Wednesday? Was anything exciting?
Yeah, you know, I found some things really fascinating today. Two of the presentations, authentication. So when you think authentication, you think like, you know, Beckett, PSA, who's the other?
GSA, I think is.
Jared Doxman, you know, Panini Authentic, you know, Upper Deck Authenticated, you know, that those kinds. So, you know who was that? It was Onyx Authenticated, Panini Authentic, this really cool guy who had, like, I guess a shop in Louisiana, like a really legitimate autograph kind of shop. He was really cool. I mean, he just said some amazing things about, you know, being legitimate and stuff. And the guy that's most interesting is the guy from Beckett Grading Services. Talked about how he has always tried to reach out to PSA and SCG, the other two big graders, to try to come together on stopping some of these forgeries and fake patches and stuff. And it sounded like sometimes maybe they're receptive when he puts in that phone call, and maybe sometimes not so much. He said sometimes some of the manufacturers are really helpful as far as fake patches and helping out with that, and sometimes they're not. So, but he seemed like a guy who was really cared about the collectors and making sure that, you know, anything that he put the BGS name on, that it was the real deal, authentic, you know, to the best of his ability. And then also help the other players in the community, you know, set standards and actually help PSA and FCG, because he's seeing maybe some fake patches or some, you know, certain cards that he can, or autographs or whatever, and then he can go to PSA and say, hey, look, you know, look at all these fake Jordans I've recently seen, or, you know, whatever. Just, and to me, that's very important. And I think I made the point maybe on the Twitter thing that not everybody in this industry can work together. But in one segment that I think that it would be very valuable for them to work together is in this kind of authentication, grading, especially autograph authentication, that for some of these companies to try to somehow work together a little bit, because they both would benefit, because they both want to crank out, you know, when they say something is authentic, for it to really not be authentic. So the more knowledge they can have, the better, I think. And then collectors are going to make their own determination who to send it to, who to use. Collectors can make that decision. So I just thought it was really interesting, and there were some interesting people in the audience. There was a guy from NFL auctions, and he said something very interesting, that he's seen that people go on the NFL website, they'll buy a Tom Brady signed jersey that's authenticated from NFL auctions. They'll buy it on the website. Now, it's just a signed jersey. They'll take it home, drag it through the mud, put it on, you know, eBay or an auction house or something, and it'll sell for 10 times, you know, because, oh, it's authenticated, game used, but they put game used, NFL auction, and nobody ever checks the serial number. And all they would have had to do is there's a little NFL auction serial number, and they could just go to the website, type it in, and it would say signed Tom Brady jersey, and it would have a picture of the item. But people don't even do that. They trust these auction houses, and they even a couple of them were like, there's some shady, I wish they would have said their names, but you know, people are afraid to talk around here. People are afraid to, like, you know, ruffle some feathers around here. You know, people are real sensitive sometimes around here. So I wish people would just name names, especially in scams and cheaters and stuff like that. People are afraid to get sued and stuff, so whatever. You know, but I thought it was a great presentation. I thought all the guys up there were really honest and, you know, had their own perspective and stuff. So that was really interesting. And then another thing blew my mind was, you know, and before I get into that, Amazon gave a little talk and presentation. Unfortunately, I got pulled out of that presentation for about 5 minutes, so I missed most of it. Again, like I said, people are very sensitive in this industry. You know, whatever. So, like I said, I got pulled out of that presentation for 5 minutes because I have to deal with something. But so I missed some of the Amazon presentation. And then Beckett was showing off their, they call it the Beckett Accelerator, and it's been around for a while. It's basically like the Beckett Marketplace. It's the most amazing kind of selling tool I've seen in this industry ever. Everybody knows that Beckett has like the largest database. You know, you can pretty much go there if you want to at least see if a card exists or whatever. You can just type it in and, you know, all that stuff. They have they basically have a database of, you know, all the sports cards, Pokemon, I mean, all kinds of different stuff. So if you want to sell, you're able to access that database, and it was really sweet because they were showing demos of it, and you can cross-sell on Amazon and eBay. You can really set prices and manipulate things really easily, really quickly, all from utilize. So if you buy an entire set of 2011 Tops or whatever, and you know you have every single card, you're able to list that really quickly, either however you want, in single card fashion on the Beckett Marketplace. And if you want to list on Amazon, you can list on Amazon. If you want to list on eBay, you can list on eBay. It was just like one of the most amazing things I've ever seen. And the guy who utilizes it the best, there's not actually that many people who utilize it because it's $250 a month, which sounds like a lot, but it's really not, because there's the guy Burbank Sports Cards. I know you're familiar with him. I'm familiar with him. We've never been to a shop, but I've heard about his shop, how you just go in and you don't flip through cards in a box and stuff. He called it, that was like the 1995 card shop, where you go in, you look at card, and you got to flip through all these stacks. He says he just has kiosks in the front of his store. You go in, you type in the guy you want, you order everything on that kiosk, you go up, you hand the piece of paper to the kind of inventory control guy, and he plucks all the cards from a warehouse, which sounds like, oh, that's so impersonal, and that's so, you know, oh, that doesn't sound like a good experience. The guy's a baller. The guy's killing it, and he's really smart, and he to me, it's like, wow, he really pushes the Beckett Marketplace. He actually figured it out. He said it would cost him like $10 million to list his cards on Check Out My Cards or something. Like, if he literally took his entire inventory and put it for sale on Check Out My Cards, it would cost him $10 million. He said if he were to list it on eBay, it would cost him like $1.1 million or something. Whereas on the Beckett Marketplace, it's $250 a month, and then they take like 10% of your sales. So he's able to list, he has like over a million cards for sale. So just on the Beckett Marketplace, he's able to list every single card he has for a million cards for only $250 a month, and then 10% of what it ever sells for. And then he'll list things on Amazon. I think it's like $40 unlimited SKUs. So he's able to easily list everything he has for sale on Amazon for $40 a month. Or if you have the Beckett, I think it's all inclusive or whatever. So if you pay Beckett $250 or whatever, it's all inclusive. And then on eBay, he only puts select things on eBay because you only get, you know, so many free listings a month, and then, you know, on, and the eBay's a little more expensive because it's, you know, listing fees sometimes after you reach a certain point. So it was just incredible technology that I don't know why more people with a huge inventory. Like, I even sat there and I talked to the people afterwards for a long time. I was like, I wish I had a 500,000 cards to sell, because I would use this. Because for $250 a month, and there's not that many dealers using it, and there are a lot of people who are going to Beckett, and the guy had stacks and stacks of orders. The guy was killing it, the Burbank sports guy. He was
He has so many cars. He's been doing it for so long. I think he buys a lot at a really low price, too. He gets people to... I mean, you know, if you own a car shop, you got people coming in there that... Or you could give them $5 for $400 worth of cards, and they think they're getting the better end of the deal oftentimes.
Yeah. Right. And he even had the buy listing. He even showed me some of his buy listing of what he buys. I mean, he buys cards for nothing, but he buys all the... He'll buy base from you. You know what I'm saying? He'll buy base. It's not like I'm only buying Andrew Luck autographs. You know, I'm only buying, you know, Mike Trout patch cards and stuff. The guy buy you know, 1999 base cards. So... I just thought it was fascinating. Like, it blew my mind. I was like, wow, why don't more people who have huge, or why don't you set up a card store exactly like the guy at Burbank did? The guy murders it. The guy freaking kills it. Why doesn't anybody just copy what, you know, everybody copies each other in this industry. Why hasn't anybody copied what he does? And the guy kept saying, man, I can't believe there's more dealers in this room. This is the most important presentation. He's like, I murder it. He's like, it's inventory control. It's you know, a modern kind of way to do things. It's so easy because Beckett just spits out a title for you. They're going to spit out stock photos and stuff, and it's so easy that you have to make it worth it for yourself. The $250 a month is going to be a barrier for some people, but. If you had a ton of cards, or if you just had a card store, why not set it up exactly like old boy at Burbank Sports Cards did? Because he's killing it, and he's been doing it for a minute. And he even said, I couldn't do my business without the Beckett Marketplace. Oh, he said one day it went down for like 2 days or something. He said those were the worst 2 days of his life. It was great. It was the most. It was one of the most fascinating, like. Things I've ever, it's the most powerful selling tool that this industry has. It literally is the most, and why more dealers don't set up their store and use it and then cross sell everything you have in your store. Everything you have in your store should be for sale online. And single card wise, the Beckett Marketplace for $250 a month is like a bargain. If you had a ton of, I mean, obviously you have to have a lot of inventory. That's why I told the guy. I was like, God damn, I wish I had a half million cards. Like, Jesus Christ.
Well, I mean, half million cards, that's a lot of cards, but...
That is a lot, yeah. You would need a lot of cards. You know, stacks and stacks and stacks. And obviously, you're doing the shipping after that. It's not like, check out my cards. You know what I'm saying? And that's one of the advantages of check out my cards. And that's why you pay way more on check out my card. You're paying 25 cents a card and fees, you know, on and on and on after that, because they're doing all the work for you. But if you're already in a card store, if you're already selling online, or you're already trying to move some singles or whatever, then the marketplace thing was, you know, if you're trying to be like a Burbank Sports Card, which I don't know why more people don't try. That's why I want to emphasize that I don't know why more people don't try that model, because... It was amazing. Like, it was really amazing that people could literally just order on their store, you know, online, on their store, just like that. And, I mean, it was crazy. It was crazy. So I just thought that was one of the most interesting things I've seen. You don't see that type of technology in this industry at all. You know. So,
well, there's not many people pushing, as you know, there's not many people pushing the envelope in this industry, really.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. Like, you know, and people are really scared when, you know, you say some things in this industry. You tweet 500 times in 3 days about baseball cards. You know, people get real sensitive and shit. So, make your business better. You know what I'm saying? So, anyways, but I thought that was amazing, and that was about it. That was literally it, I think. I left that presentation and that was it. Game over. So, a good way to end it, though, because I saw something that was innovative that was like, wow. And I've heard people have had problems and it's kind of glitchy. Well, yeah, no shit. Because it is innovative and because, it, you know what I mean? It is like kind of a new thing. It's a huge database. I mean, we're talking about just about every single card that's ever made, which is like, you know, tens of millions probably. So it's just a kind of a, you know, it's an interesting thing for dealers or for somebody with 100,000 cards, a half million cards, to try to you know, organize it. So really cool though. Thought that was sweet. Overall, thought the summit was I don't know. I thought it was okay. I liked the kind of juicy moments. That's what I live for. I think, you know, I don't know. And people are a little sensitive this year. I'll just say it like that. I think this was the sensitive.
Well, I mean, I can understand that. People got to understand too. I mean, we're not speaking to them. There was only 500 people at the summit. If you only had 500 customers, or you could do pretty good with 500 visitors to a website, but you know, there's thousands and thousands and thousands of collectors out there. Those are people I care about. The numbers are there. Why would I care about 500 people when I could care about 50 to 100,000 different collectors that are out there that have to be out there? So I'd much rather pay attention to them. And from my experience, those people have been more engaging and more exciting to talk to on the phone or via text message or Twitter. Anyways, but it's always fun to go to the industry summit because you do find out a lot of information, a lot of kind of inside information. You got anything else you want to share with everybody?
Well, I bought a Eddie Vedder painting.
Cool. For people that don't know, we might have quite a few listeners out there that are beyond the Eddie Vedder craze that ended maybe 10 years ago. But he's the lead singer of Pearl Jam, a popular band called Pearl Jam, if you don't know.
And stuff in Vegas isn't cheap. So, and it's a limited thing to 150, and I kind of like I got sold because I was like, well, this is actually a good artist. You know, it's not just something I bought on the street corner. I mean, I kind of went in, I kind of looked around, I'm kind of seeing some things. I talked to the guy, I'm like, wow, this is something that, okay, yeah, I paid quite a bit for it, but in 10 years, it literally might be worth triple what I paid for it. So I don't, and it's sweet. I'm going to put it on my wall, maybe down in the office or something. So it's freaking sweet. And so I still have an unopened black box, and so I need to freaking hit, like, Andrew Rock or Kyrie or so I saw some sweet cards. George Bush autographed, somebody hit an NFL shield, Andrew Luck 101, and the Mojo Break guys killed it. They got a Robert Griffin patch that they gave away and a Doug Martin sweet patch that they gave away, and then obviously the green cards. Thank God there's a green cards, because maybe I'll hit a Lillard that'll literally paint
those are going to be each one of those. I think there's five of them, and each one have to have $5 to $10 value at least. Right. And if you hit a star player, probably quite a bit more than that.
Right, but I mean, honestly, I bought that painting in a shop in the Rio casino, and then I bought that before I checked into my room. So I just think there was some kind of Pearl Jam, Eddie Vedder karma that I bought an expensive painting, and then all of a sudden, an hour and a half later, I check in and I'm upgraded to maybe the one of the best rooms. I mean, if there's a better room in this casino, I don't know. I mean, tile floors, a freaking, you know, duvet, a freaking the electronic curtains and stuff, and the ceiling's got to be about 40 feet. I mean, it's. I mean, I don't even know what to say right now. I mean, so I got really lucky. You know, the summit ended a little bit on a sour note. Like I said, people are real sensitive. And when people talk to me, it's like, why can't I say what the hell I want?
Well, okay, who is sensitive? Let's just, who cares about names and all that crap? Who is sensitive today?
The organizers of the event.
Oh, okay. Well, they got to realize, I don't know, they can go and look how much free traffic we've sent them. I'm sure I've gotten plenty of emails saying I'm going to the summit this year because of hearing your podcast and hearing your information about it and stuff like that. So I wouldn't I think if he investigated it a little bit and realized the ROI he's getting from us talking about his event is going right into his pocket, and we get we are not asking or want nothing. Any of that.
I get nothing. I'm making nothing this week. I'm not going to go home and write a bunch of articles and throw up a bunch of ads. I'm going to go home and watch baseball. And that's what I told them. I mean, that's what I tell everybody. They think I'm, like, all serious about this. And I look at him dead in the face. I'm like, I'm going to go home and watch baseball. Period. I'm not going to fucking sit here and keep tweeting about baseball cards. But this is a big deal. Everybody's in the room here. And people at home who actually care more than I do, I'm fully aware of that. There's a lot of people who are very passionate about the cards themselves, about collecting, and they spend a ton of money. I spend a ton of money on Eddie Vedder paintings. I'm not going to buy a $300 black box on eBay. I'm not going to buy a $500 box of National Treasures. But I know there are people out there that very passionate, and they do spend that big money on huge money, and sometimes they get effed in customer service. And so I'm going to come here and stand up for those guys, or at least provide them with some information. And if I have to speak up or to make sure that people's voices are heard, or that company employees are working harder, especially in regards to customer service. I mean, these products are not cheap at all. And a lot of people are making a lot of money in this industry. Box breakers, and I'm hearing about box breakers making six figures, and distributors making millions, and blowout cards making millions, and all this kind of stuff. And I'm thinking to myself, well, what the fuck? Why doesn't somebody stand up for these collectors who sometimes are getting screwed on these, when are the collectors? They're opening boxes and they're getting 10% of value out of there. If you open a $100 box, you might get $5 worth of cards 9 times out of 10. So who's going to stand up for them? So, I'm going to come here and at least provide some information, and because everybody's in the room. But, now I'm going to go home and watch baseball, because nobody's going to fucking listen to anything that I have to say until probably the next summit or maybe the national convention or something. So it's just an opportunity. Everybody's in the room. Now's the time to start talking. Because trust me, everybody's going to go behind their computers or their own offices or whatever, and they're not going to care about you. So, and they're not going to have to deal with you. Whereas if you're here, right, telling them, I mean, I would tell these guys, no, I don't want to have a conversation with you. Ah, I think your customer service sucks. Or no, I think your company's great.
I think people are afraid of the truth, really. It's not speaking up. It's not being belligerent or anything. It's just telling the truth and holding people accountable. I think people aren't used to it. If you watch finance all day, or if you read through that stuff or read through a Yahoo message board, people are blasting companies and CEOs by name all day long and doing it publicly on press conference, all kinds of stuff. So this is not – people are, I think, a little sensitive because, like you said, there's people in this game making a lot of money, and they want to keep it quiet. They don't want collectors out there know that they're getting bent over backwards a lot of the time, feeding a guy's pocket, feeding his gas tank, feeding his country club membership. They don't want people to know that there's people getting rich off them getting screwed. And they don't want collectors to bind together and kind of hold these people accountable, because if they did – I mean, we've seen governments get overthrown, let alone if you hold a company accountable in a business, that they're certainly going to change. We've seen, governments they never thought would ever get overthrown be overthrown very easily. And so you could easily get a company to change, easily get them to do more things for you if you speak up. If you just sit there and take it, then, of course, they're going to take as much as they can because these guys are greedy.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean – like I said, I heard about all these guys making all this money. Everybody's kind of bragging to me and stuff, and I'm like, damn, I'm broke then. I mean, I'm in the presidential suite somehow. Maybe that's just my luck, because, everybody's talking to me about how much money they're making, and then I'm coming in, and I'm the guy in the presidential suite who's, got to fly back to the ghetto tomorrow. But
well, could be worse. Could be worse. Well, thanks for putting up with all the folks in Vegas for us this week. I think everybody has appreciated. We'll catch up with you when you return, I'm sure, at some point. Have a safe trip back. Ryan, any final parting words from Las Vegas?
Thank God this is over. but come next year. Come next year. For me, it's a little different, but if you just come, you're going to enjoy yourself, and you don't fucking blast people like I do, you're going to have a great time. So for me, I'm ready to get home and fucking forget about this shit. So It's well worth attending for anybody, literally anybody. You don't have to be selling, you know, just come and have fun and get some free stuff and enjoy Vegas and listen to people talk and meet some people and build good relationships and stuff. I mean, that's what it's all about. Don't do what I do, you know what I'm saying? I'm doing it because, you know, I feel like there's a little bit of a sense of duty because it doesn't seem like anybody else in this industry wants to speak up for anybody. Except they're just trying to, you know, stuff their pocket with money, to be honest. So when is somebody going to stand up for these collectors who are spending $500 a box and stuff and getting chipped cards and redemption cards that are 3 years old and stuff? So, you know, hey, we try and go from there. So that's it. Final word. Done.
Sounds good. Thanks again, Ryan.